Taking a stand on managed care, switching out latex gloves, New Orleans nurses clinics, and anticoagulant therapy. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show, Episode 5. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and you are listening to The Nursing Show. Whether you're listening live on the website or you're over downloading it to your favorite MP3 player, whatever the way you're getting The Nursing Show, I want to thank you for checking out The Nursing Show and making use of all the resources and things that we have here. You want to make sure you check out all of the back episodes, and you can also search the website directly for The Nursing Show episodes, for different other articles and postings that I put up throughout the course of each week. You can do all of that over at nursingshow.com. If you have any questions, any comments, or suggestions, or perhaps even corrections for information I've presented here on The Nursing Show, make sure you get back in touch with me so we can make sure that we have the best possible information available for all of the listeners. This is a community effort, folks, so you can contact me here by email at comments@nursingshow.com, and I will make sure I get back to you to let you know that I got it, and maybe I'll feature your email here on The Nursing Show some week in the future. I will lead off the news items this week with a look at a story coming from Illinois and the Cook County Bureau of Health Services. There's a group of nurses there that will be leading a nurses and patient march to protest outside Cigna Insurance Company's stakeholders meeting being addressed by Dr. Nancy Nielsen, the new president-elect of the American Medical Association. What they're going to be protesting against is decisions by managed care organizations like Cigna that impact patient care, decisions being made by persons in the insurance industry allegedly surrounding money and not patients' best interest. The National Nurses Organizing Committee and the California Nurses Association are the ones organizing this particular event, and they are stating that Cigna has a legal responsibility only to maximize their shareholder profits, and they are not responsible for any patient health issues, meaning they should have no role in patient care decisions and management of patient illnesses, things and decisions like deciding who gets transplant coverage and who doesn't, deciding who is able to have access to chemotherapy medications recommended by their physician and who doesn't. These are the key issues that these nurses are organizing this march on, and it's something that at least I like to see us getting active in the healthcare arena. There are many things that may or may not be wrong with our healthcare system, but having decisions on persons' healthcare being decided by for-profit organizations may indeed not serve the best interests of a patient. Moving along to the next story in the news coverage today, I will be looking at a nurses initiative taking place in New Orleans. Here we are, more than 2 years after the devastation caused by Hurricane Katrina, and still many medical facilities, local clinics, and physicians' offices and practices remain closed, with little hope of any of them, or at least many of them, reopening anytime soon, if ever. And so a group of nurses in and around the New Orleans area began to put together initiatives where they would open up clinics in localities around the region that would serve the local populations there, bringing physicians in to cover them. One such place occurred in a neighborhood in just a pretty blue, ordinary-looking house, but there was a sign on the door that said, "There's a doctor in the house. Make your appointment now." So this is important. they have to go out and get coverage. Some of these people have been without any real medical coverage aside from emergency care for an extended period of time. And this has been put together primarily by the nurses in that community. This particular initiative began when nurse Patricia Berryhill began to get the idea to use her own home as a clinic in her region, in her neighborhood where there was no medical coverage. So she began to turn the bedrooms into exam cubicles, got together with another registered nurse, Alice Kraft Kearney, who runs the business side of the clinic as the executive director, and they began to organize and operate this clinic with the assistance of a physician from a nearby hospital. They began to provide basic medical services to their community in a time of great need, in a time when there doesn't appear to be any other expectation of other coverage entering the area anytime soon. So I applaud these women with their efforts and applaud them for being proactive in taking care of the healthcare needs of the population that they serve. This is a wonderful story and a great opportunity for all of us to learn how we can be proactive in our regions in times of extreme need. Finally, I will wrap up with a news item that I think we all can relate to, and depending on the facilities in which we work. But 110 years ago, latex rubber gloves were first used in a hospital setting, largely credited to a Dr. William Stewart Halstead, who was a surgeon in Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. And in fact, this gentleman is accredited back in 1894 with being one of the first or the first to introduce the use of latex surgical gloves in the United States. Now, more than 100 years later, Hopkins is again taking the lead in removing latex from their hospital and also making sure that alternatives are continued to be experimented with, expanded upon, and latex is removed entirely from the medical marketplace. Immunologists at Hopkins were among the first researchers to recognize that natural rubber latex proteins could be considered a serious allergen in certain populations among human patients and healthcare workers. And in fact, studies are now pointing out that at least 6% of the general population and perhaps as many as 15% of healthcare workers possess some level of allergy to latex products. And so it's important for hospitals and other facilities, other healthcare organizations, to remove latex from their patient population and patient contact areas. So it's interesting to see that this process has come full circle. The facility that first began using latex gloves in the United States is now removing latex gloves from their facility. And I know they're not the first hospital to do so, but it is interesting to see that this major facility has taken this step to remove latex from all areas of the hospital care system. I urge you to check out all of the links to these stories in the show notes over at nursingshow.com. Check out these news items for yourself. I really just touched the surface on them so you can get a better appreciation for the depth of these topics by checking out these articles for yourself. And I will always provide links to everything I talk about in the Nursing Show directly in the show notes that you can reach over at the website. So that's going to wrap up this episode's Nursing Show News, and I guess it's time for us to move into this week's Tip of the Week. So I thought I would do the tip and trick of the week this week on anticoagulant therapies and some of the steps that we need to remember to check out and make sure we take when administering or advising patients about taking anticoagulant medications like Coumadin, or if they're in the hospital setting, if we're administering IV medications or sub-Q medications like heparin. So what do we need to think about when we're dealing with anticoagulant therapies? Well, there's a few things that JCO wants to make sure are in place in any facility with anticoagulant therapies, that facilities like hospitals should have some form of patient safety measures in place whenever anticoagulant therapies are being initiated or maintained. Anticoagulation therapy medications like Coumadin and heparin are among the medications most at risk for medical errors and administration errors and dosing errors, all related to the fact that they need to be monitored carefully because of the narrow range for their effective treatment. And because of this ongoing monitoring process, you might think it would be easier to give these medications if you have to remember to check certain things before you give them. However, we don't always do that. And our facilities may have procedures in place, but we may not be following those procedures because of other constraints on our time and patient care efforts. And I'm not forgiving that, but this is something we need to consistently revisit and analyze how we are handling the administration of some of the medications that we regularly administer. As I said, JCO has placed anticoagulation therapy as one of their key 2008 national patient safety goals for hospitals. So if you're in a hospital setting as a supervisor, you're probably very aware of this. But let me just read a little bit directly from the JCO document regarding patient safety goals for the coming year. Anticoagulation is a high-risk treatment, which commonly leads to adverse drug events due to the complexity of dosing these medications, monitoring their effects, and ensuring patient compliance with outpatient therapy. The use of standardized practices that include patient involvement can reduce the risk of adverse drug events associated with the use of heparin, low molecular weight heparin, warfarin, and other anticoagulants. And interestingly enough, that paragraph right there really spells out the things that we need to be aware of when administering these meds or when educating patients who are going to be taking Coumadin at home and need to monitor themselves. And this is the really simple things of monitoring the effects of the medications, ensuring that the patient understands outpatient use of these medications, and using standardized practices involving the patient in their own care as part of those standardized practices, all can go a long way towards improving the patient safety profile of these drugs. So let's start with a quick look at heparin administration. Now, once upon a time, unfractionated heparin was the standard of care, but I believe in most cases, most facilities have moved over to the administration of low molecular weight heparin because of its better profile for risk and side effects in patients and less incidence of heparin-induced thrombocytopenia. So this is something that we still need to monitor platelet levels ongoing as a profile in these patients, but it is not as much of a concern as far as the numbers of patients that we expect to see with heparin-induced thrombocytopenia. When you're administering heparin, you're going to want to make sure you're checking the labs regularly, watching for trending of certain things, among them the PTT level, either the partial thromboplastin time or perhaps the activated partial thromboplastin time, And this is going to need to be within the range of about 1.5 to 2.5 times whatever the control is. And this is how that would be monitored. You're also going to want to monitor platelet levels. And if the platelet levels drop below 100,000, you're going to want to discontinue the heparin infusion or the next available dose of heparin until you've consulted with the patient's physician to find out how they want to handle this. and also follow, of course, your facility's procedures. But not just the 100,000 level for the platelets. You want to monitor their trend in platelet count. They may normally carry a very high load of platelets, maybe at the high normal end. And I've talked about this before as far as trending of things like vital signs and lab values. If the platelet level drops by, say, 50% over a period of time, you're going to want to be thinking about whether there is a heparin-induced thrombocytopenia going on. And you want to make sure you bring those labs to the attention of whoever the physician is covering this patient in your facility. You're also going to want to make regular patient assessments. You're going to want to assess them for signs of bleeding. And this may be blood in their stool. This may be bleeding because of bruising. You're going to want to monitor them very carefully for signs that they may not be tolerating this medication well. Remember, different people react in different ways. And while they may be, according to the labs, appearing to be in good shape as far as the medication levels go, they may still not be dealing with it well, and you can find that out through your normal patient assessment that you should be doing on a regular basis. And this is where that patient education type of situation comes in. As talked about in that JCO document I talked about earlier, this is where you can involve the patient in their own care. Talk to them about what they need to watch for. They're taking this drug. They're going to be the first person to notice that they may be bleeding. They're going to be the ones reporting to you that they have seen some blood in their stool when they use the bathroom. And this is the way you will be finding out about this. So make sure you involve the patient in their care program, and they can be another set of eyes and ears for you. So now the patient has progressed along. They're now moving towards oral anticoagulant therapy, with Coumadin or warfarin being the prescriber's choice in most cases. And in this situation, you need to switch your focus a little bit and start looking at things like the prothrombin time. And this particular lab value, you're going to be looking for something that is going to be 1.5 to 2 times the normal level. And this may also be registered as an INR, the International Normalized Ratio. This has been because there's been a lot of variability in the ways that labs arrive at the prothrombin time. And so the international community has tried to arrive at some kind of normalized status for the INR. And that's what they've come up with, is a normal ratio that is the same everywhere. And therefore, physicians, no matter where they are practicing, and they may be practicing at multiple facilities, can use the INR because of its standardized nature. It's not, I think, necessarily perfect according to some of the reading that I've been doing, but it's at least a better marker or another marker than your regular PT level. So you're going to monitor this and keep track of it, and you're going to want to educate your patients about taking Coumadin because they're not going to be in your facility much longer. You want to make sure that they understand that they should be staying away from things like aspirin. They should be staying away from medications like your NSAIDs, your ibuprofens, and your Aleves, and things like that. You're going to want to educate them about making sure that they monitor themselves for signs of bleeding and signs of low platelet counts, and get themselves tested according to their physician's request on a regular basis. They may be doing in-home testing, or they may be going to their local lab for testing. So that's a brief overview of anticoagulation therapy and some of the steps we need to take when doing that. And you can find a little bit more posted soon on the nursingshow.com blog. I want to thank everybody for checking out this episode of The Nursing Show. If you like what you hear, make sure you come back and check out all of the other episodes in the back catalog, and stay tuned for the new episodes that'll be coming out regularly here at nursingshow.com. If you'd like to get back to me with any comments or suggestions for the show, or maybe corrections of something I may have misspoken, go ahead and send me an email here at The Nursing Show at comments@nursingshow.com. I'll make sure I read over them and get back to you to let you know that I got the message, and maybe I'll be reading your email here on The Nursing Show in a future episode. In the meantime, stay tuned and share the nursing show with somebody you know and let them share in the information that gets presented here. Make it a community effort and we can all share in becoming better nurses in our practices in the field. I will end, as I always do, with a great piece of PodSafe music, this week from a band by the name of Crystal City and the song Gray. You can find actually a download link to this song over at nursingshow.com in the show notes for episode 5. And you can take a listen to their music. If you like what you hear, make sure you let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.
Arrive at the place, it's all